Ready?
Yep.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Fairbanks City Council Regular Work Session. This is September 17th, 2024. Madam Clerk, would you please call the roll?
Mayor Prus.
Here.
Mr. Cleworth.
Here.
Ms. Rogers.
Here.
Ms. Sprinkle.
Here.
Ms. Tidwell.
Here.
Mr. Marnie.
I'm here.
Mr. Ringstad.
First up is Ordinance 6290, an ordinance amending the collective bargaining agreement between the City of Fairbanks and the Fairbanks Firefighters Union, IAFF Local 1324, to add a community paramedic and training captain positions. This is advanced from the September 23rd meeting. Mr. Sanders, would you please bring us through this?
Sure. So these are positions that have been funded for quite a while now. We're ready to move forward with them, putting them. They were temporarily going to go different places. The training captain was going to become an assistant chief position, and then the community paramedic was going to become a mobile integrated healthcare technician over here in City Hall, and we have since decided not to do that and to put these in the fire department. So that's all this ordinance is doing. It's for positions that are already funded. We're just moving them into the fire department.
Any questions for the chief of staff? Why doesn't that surprise me, Ms. Sprinkle? I'm never surprised. Go ahead.
I just want to make sure why we're doing that. It's the why. I'm sure there's a great reason. Can we have it?
Sure. So these were originally in the fire department at the beginning of the year. We weren't getting any traction on getting the positions going. We thought maybe we can get them going by bringing them over to City Hall and to IAFF for the assistant chief position. Once we did that, then the union came back to us and said that they were willing to work on getting the positions going again. So the mayor gave them a month to work on it, and we had it figured out in maybe 2-3 weeks, and now they're ready to go.
So does that mean they'll be looking to fill them immediately, or is there going to be another wait time?
We should be able to open these up next week after this is approved on Monday.
So the delay that was initially part of the positions is gone?
Yes, that's gone.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? Mr. Cleworth.
Mike, what was the reason for the delay of filling that over there and eventually a decision to move it over here? What was the problem?
The union wasn't ready to work on it at the time. That was all. Originally, they wanted to tie it into negotiations. They were willing to, like with the community paramedic, they wanted to tie in raises for other positions with establishing the rate for the community paramedic. We wanted to do it separately to get the program going. They wanted to tie it in with the ongoing negotiations. We have since taken out of the ongoing negotiations to do it separately like we wanted.
Mr. Ringstad.
I guess that concerns me a little bit that, what was this, 10 months ago, we decided as council to go forward with this position, and it's been sitting there because they didn't want to negotiate this with us?
No, they wanted to negotiate it, but they wanted it to be part of the ongoing CBA negotiations.
So they delay our policy call a year?
Yes, they did. Mr. Marnie.
So, Chief, is this position, the community paramedic, is that going to be an easy job to fill? I mean, have you got fingers out in the community where?
Yeah, I think we'll have, a recruitment period, obviously, to make sure we have a good pool to pull from. Of course, we don't want to shortchange ourselves. So, but I think there's interest for positions like this, not only locally, but regionally, and maybe even down into the lower 48. These are not new programs necessarily, but I think that the expansion of this, especially in an area that has so many other pieces of these puzzles already in place that Fairbanks is lucky to have, I think this is a pretty easy position to fill. Now, I mean, I don't know that 100% to be true, but I think that after a normal recruitment period that we should have, enough applicants to pull a good person from.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Ringstad.
Is any of that interest in a position like this from our current employees? I think somebody would transfer into.
There's that. There's definitely that possibility. I think we have several paramedics internally that would be great at it. Now, if it's their flavor or not, I don't know. But I think that it would definitely get some attention from a specific few, especially.
Anything else? Okay, we'll go on to the next item, Ordinance 6291, an ordinance increasing staffing in the Fairbanks Fire Department by 6 firefighters and 3 captain positions and amending the 2024 operating budget. This has not been introduced, and it's with Ms. Tidwell and Ms. Sprinkle. Ms. Tidwell, you want to bring us through this?
Sure. This came up a couple months ago. We had a meeting with a few folks from the fire department, the mayor, and we had talked about, you know, we need to hire more people. We've had this discussion a million times. Every meeting we have, we're talking about the overtime in that department. There is no other way to get that overtime to go down than to hire more people. I feel like the chief has sat in front of us time and time again, you know, saying we need this many people. Several people from the department have expressed that they are unable to. I mean, we can't ask them to bring their overtime level down without giving them more people. And I realize we're in negotiations, but I feel like this is the piece of the puzzle that we've just never really given them. The whole time that I've been on council, they come before us, we need more people, we need more people. And we just sit here and want their overtime to go down without giving them any more people. And you can look at, I mean, the fiscal note attached on here, we are projected to be about $2 million in overtime this year. And I mean, we're spending this money. And I would rather see us spending this money on people. You know, we have a revolving door over there because nobody wants to work 70, 80, 100, however many hours a week they're working. And we can't retain employees if we can't do something about their work schedule. I mean, that you have to have some kind of a work-life balance. You can't just work. That does not retain employees. Yes, there's a cost to this. It's realistically the same cost that we're spending now in overtime, but we would be adding people to our department, and hopefully, you know, that would be helpful on the retention of employee side, which in the long term is going to save us money. I mean, putting people through training just so they can leave in a couple years, I mean, we are absolutely bleeding money doing that. And I want to see us fix the problem, and I feel like this is the fix to that problem.
Mr. Ringstead, you had your hand up.
On our fiscal note, expenditure says total expenditure $389, but then clearly that doesn't give you 9 people. Down in the comments below, we talk about total cost of 1.2. Why?
I believe that's just from, that would be to implement it from now until the end of the year.
It's to the end of this year.
Yeah. What? Yeah, that down there at the bottom, the those are the salaries for the year. So yeah, so the annual cost of.
Okay, so 1.16. We're changing at this point would be this year's numbers.
Correct.
What are the chances we're going to hire any of these people? The rate as quickly as we hire people, what are the chances we're going to get any of them hired this year?
I guess I wouldn't. Yeah.
I mean, realistically speaking,
it was trying
to get anybody.
So, thanks to the council and the mayor and Jake and Chief of Staff Sanders, our hiring process has improved tremendously, I would say. We have, and I think Jake can attest to this, we have people literally emailing and calling every day asking what our next round of hiring is going to be. I don't think we're going to have any issues filling these positions once the approval's given, if it's given to get these folks online. Of course, there's a training period. We have to bring them in. You know, it's not hire straight to filling the gap. But once that, you know, process is done in, you know, 6 to 8 months, hopefully, then you'll start to see some of those changes and increases and decreases in the line items that, you're trying to get accomplished. So I think we have a good pool of people waiting to see our little opening pop back up online, if you will.
So following that up, it's okay, 6 to 8 months, we get them all trained. So does that suggest to me that our overtime costs are not going to go down for 6 to 8 months while these people get trained up and ready to go?
Right. They're not going to count immediately towards staffing. There's no way to do that safely. I mean, it could be quicker than 6 months, depending on exactly who the person that we hire is along the way. But I don't want to give you an unrealistic expectation that, you know, January 15th, I'm going to be running in here saying our overtime is negative 300,000, because that's probably not going to be true. It will help, but the sooner you throw that rock into the pond, the sooner those ripples go out and start causing the effects that you're looking for. So that's kind of the way I look at it, that, you know, if you push off the clock 6 months and you're pushing that fix 6 more months out, and then, you know, you're kind of chasing the cat down the highway, as we like to say.
I kind of feel like that's what we were trying to do for the last year, and trying to bring down our overtime costs, and we keep doing this, and we never get there. So now we put out $1 million, and we're still not going to get there for 6+ months.
Right, but you're going to be closer to that, I would say, Mr. Ringstead. And, you know, and I always look at, you know, what's the return on investment, right? If you're going to put $2 million into overtime, you're not gaining anything from that as the city or the citizens benefit. If you put 1.1 or 1.6 million into personnel, then we do our job better, we do it safer, we do it faster, we do it more efficiently. So the money is still being spent, yes, but the city and the citizens are getting a return on that investment versus you're still paying the same people just more to do the minimum amount of work that we can get done with those folks. So I offer that as a consideration to think about, that, you know, there's a cost to everything. It's just, where do you want to put it? Is it into the big black abyss of overtime, or do you want to put it into personnel that actually make your services increase and get better, stronger, faster, gooder? Yes, I said gooder, just to see if you were paying attention.
I got a couple of concerns, I don't know if nine's the right number of people, but I've also got a concern in terms of how we control our workflow, and we've had this fight with our negotiation continues in terms of you being able to manage these people. So I've got a concern about which is the chicken and which is the egg here. Do we get management control and then let you put people where you need them? Or do we do this and then never get management control? I mean, we give 9 more people, and if we still can't control how much, what you're doing with them, then we've just got 9 more people. So how do we get around that?
Any other questions on this or for the chief? See, Mr. Marnie.
Well, I have heard rumor that there are cracks in the current CBA that would not necessarily make the overtime go away if we hired the 9. Is that a true rumor?
So there are provisions in the current CBA that we haven't been able to use since I've worked here for the most part. Once we're above minimum, it does change some of the acting and staffing rules that are inside of the CBA. For many, many years, we've been stuck in one version of the CBA because we've always been at or below minimum. Which is a totally different off-ramp inside of how we staff. So there is a mechanical advantage to adding these people outside of the rest of the language that may or may not be worked on in the background that allows us some flexibility, and it does open up opportunities to use actors differently, to use the staff that's on shift differently, because for the first time in probably a long time that we're going to be above minimum staffing. And this builds in the cushion of injuries, you know, personal leave and things like that, where today, just with personal leave, we're always one in the hole, right? No matter what we do, if two people decide to be off, which is totally awesome and fine, we're fighting from below grade, if you will, right? So this does open up some mechanical changes inside of the CBA that we haven't seen, at least in the 2 years that I've been here, and I'm sure for several years before that, except for maybe a hit or miss day along the way.
Thank you.
Ms. Sprinkle.
Mike, help me with this. I think since we've asked for the third ambulance to be activated as a body, we've undermanned that position or that vehicle and the staff. Is that right?
Yeah. You're asking for we're mandating that there's 13 people at work every day. We budget for 14 people to be on shift. Two people are allowed to be on leave at shift. So that drops you down to 12 people a day, essentially, if two people are on leave. That's not counting people that are hurt or in training or anything like that. And with this, you add an additional leave slot, but you're adding three people. So,
Mr. Cleworth.
The situation we're in was caused by a letter of agreement from a year or two ago. It forced us into a situation where we have to really virtually have overtime in every shift. And that was mentioned at that time. Union went for it and the city council passed it, unfortunately, in my opinion. But I think that letter of agreement was in a violation of our own code, which requires us to have a funding source for the life of that obligation. That is in our code. We never identified a source. Our budget this year said $900,000, which is triple the police department's overtime. That wasn't enough, so we amended it to $1.1 million. That's not going to be enough. It's a self-inflicted wound. It took away pretty much the chief's rights to man, as he has the resources available. That's the problem. If you want to hear... point at the problem, we have a provision in the contract that needs to be changed, and I don't think is legal in the first place. So I've pointed out numerous times in the past year that most of the financial resources we have available to us go to this department and have gone to this department. Even in the letter that the police union wrote, they pointed that out as well, which I thought was ironic. I mean, that's the problem. I'm not willing to throw money at the problem. And that's what we're requested to do here. Is it a time to just say what we're doing is wrong and deal with it? So I apologize that we take a hard stance on that, but it should never have been done in the first place. Forced overtime is not a healthy situation. That I agree with this totally. We don't use it in the police department, which has a lot more severe manning problem than this department has. We don't use it. And the employees enjoy that. This has also created, I think, a real liability for the city to force people on that overtime. I know of families who simply don't answer their phone anymore when they're called out. Because if they get called in, they're going to be on not usually one shift, but more than one shift. So that's it. Thank you.
Ms. Tidwell, then Mr. Ringstead.
I would agree with a lot of that. The problem is a year or so ago when we did that letter of agreement, we decided as a council that was the service level that our community needs, which it is. We heard data and statistics from our call volumes, and our stacked calls were terrible. And that's not the kind of community that's not the service that I wanted to provide to our community. And collectively, we made that decision to get that other ambulance going, change the staffing level. And when we say we took away the chief's ability to manage that with that letter of agreement, we need to remember that letter of agreement was what the chief was asking for in order to man that extra ambulance. I mean, we're saying we didn't give him, he doesn't have the control, but that is the plan that was brought forward in order to man that service. And they did sit here and tell us that, we're going to need more people. Well, we wanted the service, but we never gave them the people. And at the same time, we still expect the overtime to go down. Like, it's just not possible. I do not want to go back on that and say, well, we need to change our service to something less, because I feel very strongly that the service level that we're providing now is what our community needs. And we've got to have people in order to provide that.
Anything else? Mr. Engstad.
You know, we've been kind of bumbling along, I feel, on this issue. And like you said, Jerry, you know, we thought we could cut this back. You know, we're not even halfway in the year. They need another 300,000. We gave them two. Now we're a couple months down the road. They're going to need another couple hundred thousand dollars. And we keep saying, yeah, okay, well, we're going to get this fixed. You know, I'm kind of getting to the point that we're going to have to force the issue. If that means not voting for giving more overtime money in the middle of the year. No, this is your budget for the year. You know, if we don't want to make some changes, I'm not opposed to putting more positions in there if we're going to get rid of the overtime. But if we're going to make a step and do this, then I want the guarantees that we're going to get what we need on the other side of this and say, no, we're going to say no to overtime. We're not going to keep doing these budget changes every year. This is your budget. Live with it. That's going to take some management control and responsibility. But that's why you get paid that big bucks.
Anything else before we move on? Okay. Next on the list is item four, discussion of Fairbanks North Scarborough Ordinance 2024-25 regarding parking and loading requirements. We have Ms. O'Neill here, and we have Mr. Spellman here. I will start with Mr. Spellman. Come on up, sir, and bring us through this. Chief of Staff, could you bring a second chair for Ms. O'Neill? Wendy, come on up. You're the author of the ordinance.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
Full disclosure, my department, the Department of Community Planning, did aid Ms. O'Neill a fair amount in drafting this ordinance. This had been on our list to do for really quite some time. And actually, I think the first work session I had with the Planning Commission was in 2010. And I think you were on the Planning Commission at the time.
It's a deja vu moment for me.
So we've noticed our parking standards need some refresh, need some help for quite some time. And this really came out kind of full force in the downtown plan. I've been before you, you've heard me talk ad nauseum on parking downtown. I gave a half hour presentation to the Planning Commission last week. I'm not gonna do that for you, but really some of the main action items right out of that downtown plan were amend our parking regulations. We thought kind of across the board, our zoning requirements. So this is a change to our zoning code. Right now in the zoning code, and actually we did a fair amount of research for this, it was the city of Fairbanks that adopted the first parking regulations in the 50s. And then when the borough took zoning in the 60s, kind of they just continued through. So really all commercial, industrial, and multifamily uses in the borough do require parking regulations. So whether that's done administratively through my department or done by the Planning Commission, and a lot of that is we have minimums. So as part of the downtown plan, we did a full-scale parking study. We have 9,000 parking spaces downtown, and the vast majority of the time, they're not occupied. Actually, only 30% of the time at the peak, really.
We have 90,000 parking spaces downtown.
9,000,
okay. Thank you. Go ahead. I was thinking, my goodness, we have 1.25 parking spaces for every resident in the borough.
I apologize if I said 90,000. I really meant 9,000. But really, kind of the point of this ordinance is to reduce our regulations. So it actually may seem like we're putting more regulations in place. It's a long ordinance. But if you actually look at this, we're kind of across the board either reducing the regulations or adding flexibility to the regulations. And My example I give almost all the time on this, and I'm not particularly proud of it. I believe I was the planner on the case. It was when Stone Soup was establishing in their current location. Our code required they put in, I believe it was 36 parking spaces. There was no flexibility to that. There was no way to bend that. We had to work with them very creatively on shared parking agreements with a number of their neighbors. We all know in this room that that was a exercise in futility. Those kind of their clientele are not driving to that location, but again, there was no flexibility. So actually what this ordinance does now is adds a flexible process so that an owner could come forward and say, hey, I don't need that much parking. Even though our parking's being reduced significantly, this adds that flexible process. It would be basically a short administrative hearing before me as a hearing officer, really similar to some of the parking hearings the city has downtown. And then I could make a determination on if they need, you know, what code requires or actually have the flexibility to reduce that. So that's a little bit of a highlight of the ordinance. The Planning Commission held a public hearing on it last week. They spent about 2.5 hours on this ordinance. It was very well discussed. We had a number of folks from the public testify in support of that, some downtown property owners. So there are a lot of details to this ordinance. I'm happy giving you kind of more of the specifics if you want to. Another, I guess, highlight of the ordinance is it would expand the no parking zone downtown. So right now it's really 1st through 5th. That would apply to the whole central business district if this ordinance passed, really playing off of that theory in the downtown plan that there's too much available parking downtown, and hopefully as a community we could better utilize that space with more businesses, more residential opportunities, et cetera. So that's a little bit of the highlight. I want to allow Ms. O'Neill to speak about the ordinance as well.
Thank you. I would just like to say I wasn't the author, just the sponsor. Definitely the credit goes to the planning department for thoroughly thinking about this and researching the need for this change in the ordinance. As Mr. Spillman said, it's really to provide more flexibility downtown. It's to offer more opportunities for growth and economic development downtown. And I think we got a pretty good product here. We'd like to see, personally, I'd like to see it go a little bit further, but it's great where it is. It's a nice baby step to start to incorporate and implement the downtown plan in a way that's meaningful. So thank you.
Any questions? Ms. Sprinkle.
And I'm just curious as to the small islands and the little bit of carve out that you've provided here. I'm just more curious, like why those and why not anything else?
So that's the base zoning of all of those properties. So they're all zoned central business districts. So I guess the little islands, if you will, there's a couple of general commercial zone properties in there. There's a couple of multifamily zone properties in there. So just kind of the red is what's zoned that central business district. So the regulations, if this ordinance goes forward, would be tied to the base zoning and not, in my opinion, somewhat of an arbitrary area, kind of 1st through 5th that you see in that blue square.
So you're not spot zoning?
No, there's no zoning changes going on with this. It's just tying it's basically exempting all the central business district from the parking minimums.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Cleworth.
Thank you both for coming today. And we'll give you both more than 5 minutes, as much as you want.
I get it.
Kellen, I'm just wondering about the detail in some of this. I mean, the general purpose, we're absolutely in agreement with. This is long overdue to eliminate the requirement to providing parking. It just makes sense. And I'm glad to see this coming forward finally. But I look at the detail in this, like on page 7 of 12, looking at number 4 there, it says, surface slope, stability, and firmness, accessible parking spaces and access aisles should have no more than 1.48, in parentheses, 2.08 slope in all directions, be smooth, free from significant cracks, and so on and so forth. Basically, this all comes down to a city responsibility with engineering. And was, did they ask for all this detail to be put into this thing? I mean, most of this is ADA requirements that we have to go through when we do a street.
Exactly, and actually the lines you just cited, basically lines 175 through the following page. So it may look like a lot of regulations are coming into code there. That's already regulations that exist. That's ADA requirements right now. So that whole section is basically word for word out of the ADA requirements that already exist.
Okay. From when, what lines to what lines?
So why did you decide to make it redundant then and put all that into your code? It just seems like it's unnecessary.
Well, our previous standards, we did have ADA standards. Really, prior to ADA, they were called handicapped parking requirements at the time. And those hadn't been updated since ADA passed. So really, we were getting rid of our antiquated requirements and just matching the existing federal requirements.
Okay, and then one last question, and Sue, you can.
No, I just wasn't sure the numbers you guys talked about.
Another one here was use on-street parking spaces to meet minimum standards of off-street parking spaces for commercial uses contained signed and striped on-street parking spaces located within 300 feet.
Where are you,
this
Jerry?
Is page 9 of 12. It's line 229. I mean, again, it's a lot of detail there for striping. Of course, striping for half a year isn't going to be seen at all. We rely on signage more than striping. Is that also out of federal standards or?
No, all this is saying is it's not putting any requirements on the city whatsoever. All this is saying that if a developer wants to count some of their spaces using on-street spaces, they could do that. I guess similar to Second Avenue, that you know all the businesses along Second Avenue obviously don't have individual parking lots, but they use the on-street spaces. So what this is saying is it's basically expanding that option to more folks if they wanted to use that flexibility. They wouldn't be reserved for specific spaces, but all it would say is, hey, there's on-street parking close to this business. It could be used to count some of the minimum spaces.
Okay, did city engineering get involved with you on this at all?
Yes, our transportation planner consulted Bob Prestash, I believe 2.5 weeks ago.
Okay, thank you.
Ms. Tidwell.
I just wanted to say, I put this on here when it went through the Planning Commission. I was excited about it. It really does have an effect on the city, so I wanted to make sure that we all saw it, and assuming that it was a favorable thing, you know, I'd like to see us maybe have a resolution of support or something, but I really just wanted to make everybody aware of this, you know, it's moving its way. It was unanimous, you know, through the Planning Commission. It'll be going to the Assembly for adoption, and I would assume that it will be adopted, but I just thought it was something of interest, and I wanted to make sure everybody knew about it.
Ms. O'Neill, is this at a first reading or a second reading, or has it been read in yet?
It hasn't been scheduled for a work session yet.
Thank you. Ms. Rogers and Ms. Sprinkle?
Well, to add to Crystal's comment there, I would be happy to support all of the work that's been done here. My hesitation about the success of thing is not because of your work or anything that hasn't been said here. It's because of the many, many, many years I've been serving on committees and also working in creating downtown and all of that, is that while this is very good, concise effort, and you've pulled things from many things that you don't have four or five different things on the shelf that everyone has to kind of figure out which one to go to and all that. So this is simplified and well organized, everything about it. However, I don't see that as our problem. I think that our problem in downtown Fairbanks has been that our town is not supported by its people. And that's a very big difference than that we don't have places to park. I mean, it's kind of, it used to be kind of cute to say, oh, well, you know, they couldn't find a parking spot. I have never in my entire life of many, many activities in downtown not been able to park very close or right in front of where I wanted to go. And so how do we dispel that? I think that if we do things like this and we vote them in and we make it easier for folks to navigate all this dialogue, then we still have that need to market our community in a way that is real and that people understand it and that people quit poking kind of, not so much fun, but poking rude comments about Fairbanks in a way that is, it's not accurate. And way back when the parking garage was being created, the idea of speaking to the community in a way that required all of this in order to get this parking garage, we're still left with all that dialogue that was utilized on voters in order to help create this structure, which doesn't get used. We all know that. We have some really big, difficult problems with perception in our community. And so while I'm really appreciative of all of the wordsmithing here, I think it's a good effort. I think it's just like a baby step towards what we really need to do about how we deal with the attitude of access in downtown. I'm not gonna say parking, I'm gonna say access, because Fairbanks is wide open as far as access goes, but people don't come downtown.
Any other discussion? Ms. Sprinkle?
Both of you doing this, coming, talking about this, this is well past time, as we know. And I'm excited to think that Fairbanks would look to use places that are dusty and parking lot oriented for something else versus just storage of cars. So I'm thrilled by this. I'll do anything that we need to do for resolutions and be supportive of this. So thank you. I'm so excited.
Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Yes, I was looking at a calendar here and I was gonna go to Ms. Marty or Mr. Ringstead. Well, I don't know if I wanna go to Mr. Ringstead.
Yeah,
but we'll go to Mr. Ringstead.
Take a nap.
Go ahead.
I appreciate your efforts on this thing. I think it's a good thing. You know, we collectively have been trying to come up with some things that are gonna improve the downtown area and revitalize it. And I think this is a step to help that process. So I appreciate that. But for some of us, help me here, make sure I understand what we're talking about, that are challenged with our colors. In the central business district, I'm trying to look at your map, what does the blue line mean? I see blue real well, I get blue. Okay, what does that mean?
So the blue line right now, that's existing regulations, that's the existing zone that doesn't require a business to put in a parking lot when they develop, or a multifamily development, et cetera.
Really?
So that's existing in code. If the ordinance passed, it would expand to the red area.
And the red area, that's where I get confused. Okay, so the red area, this goes along the river, across the river, over here by over by your office is over there, out to about, what are we looking at, 7th, 8th? And some of it goes out almost Airport Road, but not all of it?
That's correct, yep.
So that the bigger colored area is what we're really talking about applying it to. Okay, got it, thanks.
Anything else? Ms. Tidwell, I was looking at a calendar, and if you could be the author of a resolution. We have our meeting next Monday, but our next meeting after that is until October 14th, which will be changing out, sadly, a city council member. Exactly. So, exactly. So, Ms. Tidwell, if you could have a resolution available for us by Thursday, we can have this into reading on Monday, September 23rd.
Mr. Mayor?
Please put me as a sponsor on that, too.
Could I be included on that as well?
Of course.
Thank you.
Okay. Anything else? Ms. O'Neill, Mr. Helen Spellman, thank you very much. Appreciate your time here this morning.
Thank you.
Next on the agenda is a Finance Committee report. Ms. Bell.
Oh, good morning, everyone. You have before you the Finance Committee meeting report for August 22nd. The committee members discussed the cash flow analysis report. They requested additional information, so we will continue that discussion at our next meeting. They reviewed the following reports as of July 31. The balance sheet with the fund balance of $17 million. The general fund revenues and expenditure report, which I've attached a copy with revenues of $27.9 million and expenditures of $24.2 million, and a cash flow report of $25.1 million. On their next meeting is Thursday, September the 26th at 7 a.m., and they meet in the Felix Pedro conference room. And if you turn with me to the year-to-date budget report, I based the target at 58%. So we reviewed those categories that were above target, below, or on target. And you'll find that under revenue, we had two areas that were below our target, which was charges for services, and the reasons for that is we have a couple of contracts under FECC that we haven't billed for. We're still finalizing a few things with a couple of them as of that date. The second area is of fines and forfeiture, and usually we'll see that line item increase due to garnishments, which usually occur in latter part of October. Regarding expenditures, you'll find that most of our departments are below the target, and it's mostly due to vacancy. However, we do have two departments that require budget amendments, and the first one is the fire, and we discussed the overtime there. And the second one is the engineering department, because they're doing more city-related projects. The target that we had anticipated that they'll be doing DOT projects was less than, was more, I should say, than what is actually occurring, and therefore they need more funds on the general fund side. You'll see under other financing sources that our sale of capital assets exceeded our target. The Public Works did an excellent job of using the different auctioneer venue for some of our large capital equipment. This was their second year, and we've seen great returns on that piece of it. And overall, you'll see that our fund balance ending is $17 million. Any questions?
Of course not. When you speak, we listen, Margarita. Thank you
so
much.
That is all I have. Thank you.
Okay, next up is Mayor and council member comments. We'll start with Mr. Ringstead.
Yeah, and I'm glad, Mindy, you're still here. There's something before the assembly talking about, I think it's 2438, talking about some of the districts combining with the university's fire district or something in the coverage, and I'm not sure if that affects us at all and how we should take a look at that, but if somebody could look into that, I would, so we'd at least know before the assembly's going to put it out there and vote on it. So I don't know if Mindy, if you know more about that than I do, but I just kind of saw it and thought, well, we ought to ask the question. So at least we can maybe give them some positive feedback before they're ready to vote on it.
Mr. Marnie.
Well, I'll ask Mr. Chard a question here. I don't know if it's appropriate or not as far as preparing ourselves for Monday night's meeting concerning the Mecca. I know you and I have sat down and chatted, but you know, we need to have some kind of path on the way we wish to go with this. So I know it's not announced to the public today, but I need advice.
I can put a memo to council outlining the requirements of the ordinance and maybe some things that we should consider during the deliberation Monday night, if that would be helpful.
That would be. Thank you.
Ms. Tidwell. Ms. Sprinkle.
Well, no, that's not true. Let me ask you this. Do we have any update on the Alaska Motor Inn?
Nope.
Any update on the Polaris?
Nope. Read today's paper.
Oh, I haven't gotten it.
Front page.
Okay. Thank you.
Ms. Rogers, you know, when you're 6:05 in the morning, when you're drinking coffee and you're reading the paper and all of a sudden you see the photo of the Polaris building, you go, oofta. And so it's a good article to explain everything to you.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Ms. Rogers.
Well, I wasn't planning on making a comment on Alaska Motor Inn there, but driving by there, it seems very well closed up when I was coming to the meeting this morning. I don't see where there's garbage or litter around or whatnot. Is there a concern that I haven't heard spoken here regarding their process? I just think that we need to be realistic in how much time it takes to take care of construction problems. And the things don't happen like that. So I drove by it today, and it looked to me to be perfectly acceptable as someone who's had a problem that we need to be aware of and work with on what their solution is. So anyway, the other comment I'm making is I've been going to Fridays with Fire over at the fire station, and our fire chief is an incredible person who's doing all of his own research and coordinating and making information to the public in a way that is really, really beyond what is his job description would be if someone was to take the time to match all those things up. One of the things that I have learned, in addition to a dozen of other things, is disappointing to me that one of the first things I voted on with the council over 8 years ago was when we acquired our first drone, and there was a lot of brouhaha about it. It was something that I worked on to make sure it happened, because we have so many searches along our river and problematic family rescue operations that are necessary, and how we could be able to find people more quickly and easily with that. I did not realize that we hadn't gone forward beyond that first drone. And it's with the police department. It's not with our fire department. And it was brought up that we could be doing something so much more successful if we had not only a drone, but drones, plural, I think. So all of you are gonna be working on this budget here before too long for the next year. I implore you, make sure that there's some funding in there for drones. We over and over and over have families who are impacted with tragedy because of our river and the activities on the river. And it's not just folks who wander into the river or folks who take a bet, jump off the bridge. I mean, when I was a kid, that was happening here. But we have young people who have gone through slushy ice without realizing that it was that dangerous because they aren't thinking through to the actual impact of their actions. And if we were to have drones in support of all of the work that's being done over there, I think that we would be far more successful in some of our humane efforts to save people from circumstances of real tragedy. So I implore all of you to listen carefully when that proposal comes from the fire department relatively soon.
Mr. Cleworth.
Again, Kellen, thank you for the work on that. I know we pushed you years ago to get this thing done, and you made sure that the whole thing was done decent and in order. And anyway, appreciate that being back here. It's long overdue. I would like to get maybe at a council meeting in the future. I know that we have contracts to provide fire protection in certain areas outside the city. Properties on South Van Horn and areas like that. I don't know how many we still have of those, but I'd be curious to find out or get a list of the properties that we do oversee by contractual arrangement. And I know within the last year, I think Lakeview we no longer do, is that correct?
We still do the fire protection for Lakeview.
You do, okay. Yeah, if we could get an update for that, I'd like to find that out. That's it, thank you.
Couple things, Ms. Sprinkle. I gave the contractor a call yesterday on the Alaska Motor Inn, and this got his voicemail. But I was thinking about it, and there's my report to you, because I have no report. But we'll find out soon. Hopefully by Monday's meeting, I'll have a report on the Alaska Motor Inn. Also, on a long-term thought, fire stations in the interior. I'm going to be looking at this in a way. With federal funding, now we have the city of Fairbanks we're looking at remodel on our Aurora Drive, and we're looking at a complete small build on our 30th Avenue property. The city of Nenana and the city of North Pole both need fire stations or fire station upgrades. I'm sure the Fairbanks North Star Borough has fire stations that need upgrades. I don't know with the University of Alaska Fairbanks what their fire station needs are, but my thought is to put together one group to work with the senator's offices for a design plan funding upgrade over the next 2 to 4 years and take care of it all at once, because when I was down in Juneau, North Pole was down there needing $20 million for a fire station. We're going to need money for a fire station. Nenana will need money for a fire station. And so if we work collectively together with this, and whichever candidate wins the Fairbanks North Star Borough mayor's race, immediate start working with them. And just something down the road that is a long-term issue we're going to start working on now. And that's all I got. Yep. Our next meeting will be October 8th, 2024, for a regular work session. We're adjourned.